Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Logie. And she's back, folks, Teresa Sammons. Say hi to everybody, folks.
Hello.
Buddy.
Yeah. It's been a while. It's been a hot minute, but she's back with us, hopefully more regularly. So this week's episode is going to be for September 30th, 2023. Next time you hear us, we will be in the beginning of October. Which is just every time it happens, it's like, wow, where did the time go? And I say that having been basically begging for this point in the year to come for over the last few months, because I'll say it many times, it sucks having to go through summer in the South. It just does. It's hot, it's humid, you don't want to go outside, but you have to. And you basically can't walk to your mailbox without breaking out into a sweat. But hey, it's over now. It's like actually cooled off, and I'll be talking a little bit more about that in just a bit. But before we get to all that, what do we got this week to talk about? Well, one of our most famous senators passed away this week. Canada kind of went through a bit of a political kerfuffle because of somebody they invited to speak on the floor of their parliament, and we'll tell you why. Probably should have done a little bit more research on this guy, but you know, we'll get to all that. You may have heard that U.S. soldier who defected to North Korea a little while ago. Yeah, he's back. Basically, apparently, they didn't even want him anymore. So,
wow.
Yeah. And the writer's strike is finally over. It ended this week, and we'll be talking about that. All the talk shows are going to start filming again next week, so you'll be seeing them probably Monday. Obviously, the SAG-AFTRA strike is still ongoing. And we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, to get us started, as is traditional, as always, we start off with all the stuff we've done all through the week that's gotten up to this point. And as is traditional, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
This week, not too much. Just been working and dealing with stuff, so that's been largely it. But weather's been nice, though. Now we're going back to summer with a few days here around 80 for the rest of the weekend into early next week before we get some rain that cools it back down again. But yeah, that's going to be the fun part of next week. But for things I've been doing, I've been watching more Columbo, dealing with Ricardo Montalban killing a man, though using bullfighting to do it. So it's a fun little twist there. Conveniently, Columbo's in Mexico on a vacation, so that's a whole fun thing when he gets, let's say somebody sets him up for a car accident to try to fleece him out of money. And then that probably backfires because he has no money. So there you go for that. There you go for that. For things I've been playing, I've been messing around on my Steam Deck, getting retro achievements to work on there. Initially fucked up the EMU Deck stuff because I had somehow switched the emulator for N64 stuff to the wrong one that did not allow any button presses, so I had to reset it all and then reset the retro achievements that are in there. For those that don't know, I think it's through at least RetroArch, if not maybe some other stuff in there. And yeah, that's a whole cool thing. RetroAchievements.org. People have added a lot of achievements to a bunch of games on the, I'm not sure what all platforms. Seems to be a bunch of platforms there. Game Boy games, Game Boy Advance, NES, Super Nintendo, and 64, DS, PlayStation, PS2, PSP, a bunch of Atari stuff, Sega stuff, a bunch of platforms there. So if you play them through there, you kind of get the achievements for a lot of stuff. It seems to be like a lot of like, oh, you beat this level, you do this thing, whatever. A lot of very basic ones instead of some really inventive stuff. But I've been playing a Paper Mario on there. When I finally got the achievement stuff fixed on there. I finally had to restart that one because I was like an hour and a half in. So not really too bad of a restart. So I'm working my way through that. But yeah, a lot of basic stuff there. Played some more, you know, Paper Mario RPG, or not Paper Mario, Mario RPG on the Super Nintendo for some stuff, and just jumping around into a few games, seeing how that stuff works. So that stuff's nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, the other game I'm playing some of this week is Rocket League. They started their new season a few weeks ago. So I've been getting my tires back in order, getting my Rocket League legs going. So that's been fun. And yeah, that's been pretty much it. So, Teresa, what have you been doing?
Yeah, Teresa, long time. What have you been up to?
A whole lot and also nothing. I mean, isn't that the way it usually goes? Mostly avoiding the summer heat, and then it got really cold. So it's not been too bad. We're having the same thing where we have a kind of second wave summer here. And it's nice. I can dig it. It's only for 3 days. So I've been playing Fae Farm. I got it the day that it came out. And I've been kind of ridiculous with it. It's priced as a AAA game. And a lot of people online feel that it should have been more like $40, even though it has some DLC coming that's included in, you know, in the initial cost. And this isn't Steam. I'm playing this on Switch. And I really like it. Yeah, there's some bugs. Yeah, there's some things that need work. But it doesn't feel small. It feels really nice and full. More than you would expect from an indie game. But apparently this isn't an actual indie developer. But I haven't looked into that too much. I'm probably going to do a review for Smashpad for it. And I've been trying not to read other people's reviews too much, just, you know, just going into the hints and tricks and whatnot stuff online. So really cool. It can be up to three players, but nobody I know wants to play this with me because it is definitely one of those cozy games. Somewhere between a magical Animal Crossing / Harvest Moon / Stardew Valley. But I've been watching Star Trek Lower Decks, which is really, it's just so much fun. It's really so much fun. And I've enjoyed this season so far. I think we have maybe one or two more. Then the season will wrap up. But I found a kind of older anime called Hakume and Mikochi. And it's just the cutest little thing. Basically, they look like borrowers. They're really small, you know, smurf size. Well, maybe smaller. And it just talks about their day-to-day life. Their roommates, I think. It could be more than roommates. I'm not sure yet. But it's still going on, even though I think it started in, like, 2004. So they're, like, 10 seasons in. So I'm really starting in the back there. But it's really, really good for me. It would be an acquired taste for anybody else. And before we lost an actor over in the UK, I had started Jim Henson's The Storyteller, which is a small series that they had, mini series with four Greek myths. And Michael Gambon is in there as the narrator. And it's just really good. I think it's from like 1991, and the level of acting is more than you would expect for this. And you know, the Muppets are also really nice in there as well. So if you can find it, I do recommend watching it. Really nice to watch while you're having dinner. And then I had a doctor who wanted to order something for me, a test for me that I had never heard of before. So I'm going to share. It's called a cardiac calcium score. And they stick your chest in an MRI and they look for hardening of the arteries, plaque in there, any kind of dysfunction with your heart. And I got my results back. And, you know, I was kind of a little worried because I like French fries. I like fried anything.
Oh, much. Yeah. I mean, we're Southerners. It's kind of...
Right?
I'm
not
blood,
eating any kind
literally.
Of foodie stuff. Yes. But I scored in the zero percentile for a woman my age. There was absolutely no signs of anything whatsoever. So I'm feeling like I rolled the genetic lottery on that one. I'm pretty happy about it. Mm-hmm. But that's a really cool thing. I mean, I wish that it was out there a little bit more. Maybe it is, and I live under a rock. Mm-hmm. But for people of a certain age, you know, knowing if you've got some clogged arteries going on, that seems like vital information. So science is cool. Other than that, you know, just doing other stuff. Glad to be back. And Brandon, what have you been up to this week?
Well, first and foremost, I've put Baldur's Gate 3 to the side for a little bit. Not because I don't like playing it or I think it's bad or it's gotten bad or anything like that. Far from it. The game's still amazing and I love it. It's just, God, it's basically been all I've played the last couple weeks and I thought it was time to give it a little break. Because, yeah, it is very easy to just lose yourself in that game in ways that I have not done in a game in a long, long time. But, yeah. So, one of the things I've done is I re-downloaded Cyberpunk 2077. Part of it was because, for those who don't know, they put out the 2.0 update where they basically stripped out and sort of reformatted a bunch of stuff. A bit, something that's a lot closer to, I'm guessing, how they originally wanted the game to be, you know, during development, which, of course, that game famously had one of the most publicly troubled, you know, releases in recent history. But the other reason is because I wanted to play the expansion, Phantom Liberty. So the basic plot of Phantom Liberty is that, you know, you're V, you're going through your stuff in Night City, and then what happens is after you do stuff for the Voodoo Boys in Pacifica, quick reminder for those who don't know what Pacifica is a part of Night City that was originally supposed to be like an upscale resort town. But they ran out of funding like midway through. So a lot of the stuff is either like empty or abandoned or like only partially built. There's like this, one of the like most famous things you'll see is like this huge hotel complex that is like still, you can definitely still, it's like only 2/3 of the way built and you can still see like scaffolding and stuff wrapped around it. And basically what happened is that because it was basically abandoned, all of the sort of like Haitian refugees that, you know, fled the island, you know, after the waters took it, because, you know, 2077, climate change, yada, 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 basically took it over and basically run it. But after you finish doing stuff, you get a message from a Netrunner named Songbird, and that's when you find out that the president of the new United States of America, the NUSA, and Songbird herself, who is like her, I guess you're her aide-de-camp or whatever you want to call it, they were in a vehicle that crash-landed into a district called Dogtown, which anybody who's played Cyberpunk and ever noticed that huge patch near Pacifica that's like completely inaccessible, that's Dogtown. And this is where you actually get to go to it. And basically what happens is that Rosalind Myers, who was the president of the new U.S., she basically promises, she's like, I need you to do some stuff for me. And if you do it, I can use, you know, my government's tech to get that, you know, engram removed from your head and, you know, let you live a regular life. But almost immediately, there's like stuff that's questionable about it. Because the thing you need to know about, and this is specifically like from Cyberpunk lore, the NUSA is essentially a rump state of the original United States government, or a formation of it. In the backstory of Cyberpunk 2077, the United States government and basically the U.S. itself collapses in the mid-90s, largely due to the what they call the Gang of Four, which is the CIA, FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and the, I think the other is the ATF. The security apparatus is basically all sort of ended up forming a shadow government, and through their sort of hubris, they basically destroy the United States economy, causing the country to collapse. So basically, it was like the worst, considering the whole Cyberpunk game was originally the tabletop RPG was created back in the 80s. It's basically like the worst case scenario that they had back then. You know, the Soviet Union still survives in this universe, but the United States does not. But basically, in USA is essentially trying, and it's gotten to like a point where it's got like a third of the original country back. But the thing is that the new United States is basically a dictatorship that is attached to at the hip to Militech, which is like they're like the main manufacturer of like all the guns that you pick up in this game. And yeah, so as you can probably imagine, there are some things that you're going to like going into this. Like, yeah, I don't know if I really trust this woman or not. But yeah, it's really amazing, though, because like they have like gone back and made this game much closer to like how they originally presented it now. The you know, there's more people on the streets that actually seem to act like actual people. Cops actually act like cops. Like, they're not just isolated to like crime scenes. They are, you know, in their cars, they're on the streets, and they will react to you if you do something, you know, bad. There's like more mini games and stuff involved. More places you can go into. It's just more interactive overall. So, yeah.
Can you still spin around and see stuff spawn in?
No. I have not.
Okay.
Yeah. I have still seen the occasional, like, rare animation glitch, but, you know, compared to even recently, it's almost like night and day. It really is. Yeah, so, and other than that, I loaded up Starfield because, you know, I've got an Xbox, you know, and I got Game Pass, and it's on Game Pass, and so I'm going to give that game a shot, and I haven't really started it yet. It's on there, but I'm planning on starting it tonight. I do know it's a Bethesda game, and that has a whole lot of connotations to it, you know, amongst them the fact that it's probably still buggy as all hell, but you know, I'll give it a shot. Other than that, just books, music, the usual, and just enjoying the cool weather. You know, being able to actually go outside and not melt. That's worth something, you know?
Yeah.
Especially down here. Yeah, but yeah, so we got that all taken care of. Do you guys want to add anything before we move on?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay, then. It's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And let me ask you guys this. When you were in school, did you ever learn about John Brown?
Yeah, briefly. Wasn't he an abolitionist?
Well, he was like almost the abolitionist. He was the guy that had the raid on Harper's Ferry, where he wanted to, like, arm the slaves and have, like, an actual slave uprising. He's arguably one of the most, shall we say, based individuals of that era, simply because he wasn't going to wait around for any bullshit. And, you know, ever since, you know, 2020, he's kind of had a sort of, like, a massive, like, we've all sort of massively had a refocus on him and a re-look at his legacy, because I don't know about you, but when I was a kid and he was ever brought up, if briefly, he was always painted as a lunatic.
Huh.
Yeah. Because, you know, Georgia, Civil War, Lost Cause bullshit, you know. But he wasn't the only type of individual that was, shall we say, just ready to throw down for the cause of abolishing slavery. And when I mean throw down, I mean throw down. John Brown did not just use words. He used bullets and lots of them. He also used broadswords a couple times.
Ooh.
Yeah. There's this famous story of when you ever learned about what leading Kansas, where it was like, you know, it's like they decided it's like we're going to let the people of Kansas find out what's going to be. It's going to be a free state or slave state. So a whole bunch of people moved to Kansas. Some of them anti-slavery, some of them pro-slavery, and then they all started to beat the ever-loving hell out of each other.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and John Brown was one of the people who was down there with his family. And the thing about, you know, the slave power back then is that it was both incredibly amoral and bloody, and it had no problem just straight up murdering anybody that it thought was opposing it. So John Brown one time took him and two of his sons, went out to this house of this guy who was a slave owner, and, you know, with his wife and his children, and they basically dragged him out in the middle of the night and cut him to pieces with broadswords.
I did learn about this now that you're talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was just one of the things he did. But like I said, he was not the only individual ready to throw down for the cause of abolishing slavery. There was another gentleman, right, who was almost also his contemporary. He gets kind of overlooked because he's kind of, you know, whereas, you know, Brown is sort of considered instrumental in almost helping start the Civil War, or at least lighting the powder keg that ignited it. This guy kind of was content in working in Lincoln's government afterwards and, you know, going over to foreign powers and helping them, you know, keep them from trying to throw their support behind the Confederacy and all that. But he did a lot of stuff before he did that, and he was ready to throw down. He was from the great state of Kentucky. He was born from a wealthy planter family, and his name was Cassius Marcellus Clay.
Oh.
You've heard
of this. Is going to be good. Yes, this is going to be good.
Okay, and if you're wondering, wait, Cassius Clay, that name sounds familiar. Yeah, Muhammad Ali was originally named after this guy. Well, his father was named after him because he was also named Cassius Clay. Muhammad Ali was born Cassius Clay Jr. But what you need to know about Clay is that he was born from a very famous planter and political family. He was cousins to Henry Clay, for example. And they were among the wealthiest planters in the state of Kentucky. He basically lived a lot of regular planter youth at that time. You know, he was, you know, his staff lived a fairly regular life. And then he went to Yale College in 1832. And while he was there, he went to a lecture that was given by one William Lloyd Garrison, who is one of the most famous abolitionist figures in American history. And while he was there, he was like, this guy's lecture apparently was so persuasive and forceful that Cassius Clay decided, you know what, I'm going to dedicate my life to ending the institution of slavery in America. And that's exactly what he did. Now, the thing about Cassius Clay is he was from Kentucky. And Teresa can tell you this. There's a certain reputation that people from Kentucky have. And here's another thing. Since he was a family of a wealthy planting class, that meant that he and his family tended to operate with a bunch of other wealthy planters. And as you can imagine, a lot of those other wealthy planters did not like him talking about how he wanted to end the slave trade in the United States. So you know what happens when wealthy planter aristocrats from the South end up getting angry to other wealthy aristocratic planters from the South? You know what they usually do? They challenge each other to a duel. And that's exactly what happened to Henry Clay. A bunch of these guys kept trying to challenge him to duels. And he kept winning. Because apparently he was that damn good of a shot. So he basically probably put more planters into the cemetery than John Brown did in his entire lifetime. but yeah, so Clay tried to get into politics. He went to the Kentucky House of Representatives, and he served 3 terms there. But he eventually lost support because, again, he promoted abolition. And so he decided, you know what? Because of this, I'm going to go ahead and do what Mr. Garrison did. I'm going to go and become an anti-slavery lecturer. And that's what he did. So he went around the country giving these famously forceful anti-slavery lectures. He would do things where he would come out and he would have like a rucksack, and he would pull out his rucksack. And he says, for those of you who believe in the laws of God, I give you this argument against slavery. And he'd pull out a copy of the Holy Bible, and he'd slap it down on the table. And then he walked to the other side of the table. He said, and for those of you who believe in the laws of man, I offer you this argument against slavery. And he pulled out a copy of the United States Constitution, and he slaps it down the table. And then he would say, and for those of you who believe in neither the laws of God nor man, I offer you this argument against slavery. And he'd reach into his coat, and pull out 2 revolvers and slam them on the table. And it was while he was doing one of these particular lectures that somebody tried to assassinate a guy by the name of Sam Brown, who was a hired assassin. He was hired by some of the wealthy planters that apparently, you know, Cassius Clay had made enemies with. And so the guy pulls out a gun. He tries to shoot him in the chest. Now, the thing about Clay you need to know is that, as I previously mentioned, he tended to go around pretty well armed. And you kind of had to be if you were going for this cause, because there was always people trying to kill you. And among the weapons he carried on top of those pistols was a Bowie knife that he had that was tipped with silver and shoved into a metal scabbard in his chest. And it just so happened that as he was pulling this knife out to further make his point, Sam Brown shows up and tries to shoot him in the chest. And guess where the bullet ends up? It ends up hitting the scabbard, basically saving Brown's life. Now, this was probably the biggest mistake of Sam Brown's life, because he just tried to kill Cassius Clay, and Cassius Clay survived. So you know what that means. Cassius Clay rips the knife out of its scabbard. He starts trying to make his way towards Sam Brown as Sam Brown tries to get away. The guys that were there who had hired him that were trying to, at this point, protect Sam Brown from Clay, he managed to wrestle them all the way until he managed to grab Sam Brown, dragged him to the ground, and then with his Bowie knife proceeded to cut off his nose, his ear, and gouge out one of his eyes.
He didn't mess.
No. And then what's funny is because Sam Brown lived, he eventually took to court. And Sam and Henry Clay's lawyer told the judge, "Your Honor, this is just common actions for someone from Kentucky." And the judge said, "I'll allow it." And Cassius Clay got off scot free. So after he finished his whole speaking tour, Cassius Clay founded a anti-slavery newspaper that was called The True American in Lexington, Kentucky. And as you can imagine, almost within a month, he started getting death threats, and he had to arm himself even more than he had previously. And he had to basically like arm up not just himself, but the office itself. The doors to his newspaper offices were solid steel. He also had, if you were going to get to his office, not only did you have to go through this door, he had a hallway built where it was nothing but metal walls, metal floor, and metal ceiling that only one person could get through at a time. So that if somebody did try to get him, he was basically intending to fight a mob of people one by one. And did I mention also that at the end of his actual desk in his office did not lead directly from his that office door? No, he actually had it up against near the right side of the office near the wall, because that door, it would mean that he could see someone coming in if they come in. Oh, and also because he had a 4-pounder cannon that he set up like right inside of his office that was facing that area if the door opened.
Wow.
Because, he wasn't going to screw around. He also had like a a secret getaway hatch. Not for him, no. That was for his staff, because he told his staff that if ever a violent mob was coming here, I want every single one of you to duck out of here and get to your homes and get safe, because I plan on murdering all these sons of bitches by myself. Yeah. Oh, and did I mention people could. Were still challenging him to duels at this point, and he still kept putting them in the ground? Yeah. But, he did eventually go into the army. He served in the Mexican-American War as a captain with the 1st Kentucky Cavalry. He opposed the annexation of Texas and the expansion of slavery into the Southwest. But he volunteered because Mexico was attempting to seize the state, which it still claimed. There was also a time when he, during this time period, he made another one of his famous anti-slavery speeches in 1849. He was attacked by the Turner brothers, who were 6 of them. Who were, you know, who also were slave owners. They tried to beat, stab, and shoot him, and in the ensuing fight, he fought off all 6, using his Bowie knife, even killing Cyrus, one of the Turner brothers. In 1853, he granted 10 acres of his expensive lands to a gentleman named John Fee. Fee ended up founding Berea College, which was open to all races, so Clay helped open one of the first desegregated schools in the United States. He kept really good connections with the anti-slavery movement in the North. He was one of the founders of the Republican Party in the state of Kentucky and befriended, you may have heard of him, a little gentleman who was a congressman at the time by the name of Abraham Lincoln, who, of course, would be president in 1860. He was briefly a candidate for vice president in the Republican National Convention that year, but lost it to Hannibal Hamlin. But his work and his actions did not go unnoticed by Lincoln. So Lincoln ended up appointing him to the post of minister to the court of Russia in St. Petersburg. The Civil War, of course, started before he departed. And there were no federal troops in Washington at the time, so Clay ended up organizing a group of 300 volunteers to protect the White House and the U.S. Naval Yard from a possible Confederate attack. They became known as the Cassius M. Clay's Washington Guards. And in recognition, President Lincoln gave him a presentation Colt revolver as gratitude. He went over and he embarked to Russia. And while he was there, Tsar Alexander II, who put forth the what's known as the Emancipation Reform of 1861, which abolished the serfdom in Russia. So when he was there, he managed to convince the Russian government to come to the aid of the Union, who furthermore threatened war against both Britain and France if they officially recognized the Confederacy. And for those who don't know, that was always a big fear of the Union government, if the British and French threw their weight behind the Confederates. Because remember, the Confederacy at the time still had the monopoly on the cotton trade, and both of those countries really wanted that cotton. But Cassius Clay was very much secure in making sure that Russia secured aid and gave it to the Union. Emperor Alexander II of Russia himself gave sealed orders to the commanders of both his Atlantic and Pacific fleets and sent them to the east and west coast of the United States. They were instructed that the sealed orders were to be opened only if Britain and France entered the war on the side of the Confederacy. When the Russian Atlantic fleet entered New York Harbor, Secretary of the Navy Gideon Welles wrote in his diary, "In sending these ships to this country, there is something significant. What it will be, its effect on France and French policy, we shall learn in due time. It may be moderate. It may exacerbate. God bless the Russians." Now, in 1862, he was recalled back to the United States in order to accept a commission from Lincoln as a major general within the U.S. Army. Clay refused to accept it unless Lincoln would agree to emancipate slaves under Confederate control. You may know this as the Emancipation Proclamation. And Cassius Clay is more or less one of the guys that convinced Lincoln to go ahead through with it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Clay resigned his commission on March 11, 1863 and returned to Russia, where he served out his time as ambassador until 1869. For his service in the Civil War, Clay received a pension, noting his service as a major general of volunteers, as well as his service in the Mexican-American War. He was also influential in negotiations for the purchase of what would become the state of Alaska.
Hmm.
Now, outside of that, he also did stuff like working to nationalize the railroads, or at least trying to come out in favor of doing that, fighting against the power being approved by industrialists. He also founded the Cuban Charitable Aid Society to help the Cuban independence movement under Jose Martí. He, as famously as you know, had a reputation as a rebel and a fighter, and he was accustomed to carrying guns and a knife for his protection. Installed cannons to protect his office and his home. By the time in his later years, it's pretty well considered that by that point he had pretty much completely lost his marbles, largely due to just the sheer amount of shit that he saw and experienced during his life. You know, because you're thinking, you know, this guy's kind of a badass, but then you remember, wow, this dude must have had some serious PTSD later in life. And yeah, he did. I mean, remember, this dude faced God knows how many assassination attempts, not counting the ones he personally fought off himself. He died in 1903 of what was called general exhaustion. Now we just call it natural causes or old age. He was 92 years old. Survivors include his daughters, Laura and Mary Barclay, who were both women's rights activists. So, yeah, that was Cassius M. Clay, one of the greatest badasses of American history. And he came from the great state of Kentucky, even though apparently the great state of Kentucky weren't pretty fond of him. And that's been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. So, Teresa, I'm going to take a wild guess and say you've heard that name once before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm guessing he's kind of a legend down there.
You know, if he was, they really didn't present him that way. It was honors American history, yeah. So it was all very kind of matter of fact. Mm-hmm. But you know, the teacher who I had for American history, he really did talk about the importance of him, and I mean, that's kind of such a cool time in history where one person truly could make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, so moving on from there, it's now time to go on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is the U.S. soldier that defected North Korea has been returned to the U.S. Yeah.
Yeah, Travis King.
Yeah.
A 23-year-old American soldier who ran across the border into North Korea in July was transferred into U.S. custody and on his way back to the U.S. this past Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Basically, North Korea sent him to China,
mm-hmm.
Transferred him to China, where he was handed over to the U.S. from there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, now he's on the way to military hospital just to check him out.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll figure out what to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is a thing that the U.S. officials have been working on for a few weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they don't have diplomatic relations with North Korea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm guessing in the weeks to follow, we're going to find out why he did it. But, yeah, in the meantime, it was kind of a stupid thing to do. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But next up, we got this is a story I did not expect to hear in a million years. A Nevada grand jury has indicted a witness in the killing of Tupac Shakur.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. This guy, Dwayne Kefedi
mm-hmm.
Davis. I don't know how to pronounce it. Kefefed.
Mm-hmm.
Was apparently in the car that the shots came from to kill Tupac Shakur in the other car.
Mm-hmm.
was not necessarily quiet about this information, as he wrote a book called Compton Street Legend, saying he was in the Cadillac from which the gunfire erupted during the September 96 drive-by shooting. So he has been known as this, as a figure in it, supposedly of more than you might expect, as they described him as the on-ground, on-site commander who ordered the death of Shakur. So that's a whole thing there.
Yep.
Yeah, they raided a home in mid-July last in Las Vegas. That was tied to him. They're looking for items concerning the murder of Tupac Shakur. They collected multiple computers, a cell phone and hard drive, a Vibe magazine that featured Shakur, several 40 caliber bullets, two tubs containing photographs, and a copy of Davis's memoir. So yeah, I'm not sure what the charges are going to be. Yeah, I don't see them listed here really. Or no, he was charged with murder with use of a deadly weapon. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's 60, so he might end up going to prison for the rest of his life.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, that happened. And that is that. I mean that killing has been a mystery for decades now.
I wonder how the conspiracy theorists are handling this news.
Yeah, and I'm wondering. And it's funny enough. I have this. Because it seems like this wasn't connected to the whole East Coast West Coast thing that was going on at the time. Because a lot of, for years, people had been sort of pinning the responsibility on Suge Knight, and looks like Suge wasn't involved in this. Not that he wasn't involved in a whole lot of other shit, but
yeah.
I want to say he was involved in this.
Yeah,
I think it is mentioned somewhere that he was. Yeah, Shakur was in a BMW driven by Death Row Records founder Marion Suge Knight. In a convoy of about 10 cars. So,
yeah,
he was involved, maybe not in the killing aspect of it, but was maybe involved in some escalation or whatever that led to the shooting.
Possibly. But anyway, next up. Oh, boy, this next one is just, it's a shit show. Canada's Speaker of the House has resigned after inviting a World War II veteran to the floor, and this was because, you know, war in Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. And it was later found out that he had been a Waffen.
Yeah. He had fought for Ukraine.
Yeah.
But then when fighting was done there, he joined the Nazis.
Yep.
Because that's what a number of Ukrainians did then. Because as people started looking up this guy... and so, yeah, the Speaker of Canada's House of Commons resigned. What's his name here? Anthony Rota. Celebrated him, 98 years old, Yaroslav Hunka. And he has a war hero related to, you know, Ukraine and all that to celebrate the president joining them in the House of Commons. And it's like people start looking up who this guy was and like, why the hell are they doing this? Why didn't nobody like do a thorough investigation that might have even just, honestly, people are just looking up a Wikipedia page on the guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, you couldn't do that? Yeah, here's a Wikipedia page.
That's bad.
He's a Ukrainian-Canadian World War II veteran of the 14th Waffen Grenadier Division of the SS.
Yeah.
That's the first sentence.
Yeah.
A military formation of Nazi Germany.
Yep.
You couldn't do that.
Nope.
It's literally in the provided description on the Google page for his name. Of what it summarizes from the Wikipedia page. Literally that first sentence.
That's comically awful.
Yeah.
Like that's what your staff is supposed to do.
Make
sure the old guy that fought in World War II, make sure they're not Nazi. That's all you gotta do.
Yeah. And the thing about, you know, Ukraine during World War II is, you know, basically because of the fact that it was part of the Soviet Union at the time. For those who don't know, Ukraine was essentially more or less colonized or, you know, recolonized by the Soviets after the Russian Revolution happened, along with Belarus. Because of that, Ukrainians kind of have this weird history with allying themselves with basically anybody at the time who was, you know, opposing the Soviet Union, who just so happened to be the biggest opponent of the Soviet Union in Europe at the time. It was Nazi Germany. And it also didn't help that a lot of the nationalists in Ukraine at the time, and still to this day, weren't too ideologically far from the Nazis themselves.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman by the name of Stepan Bandera. Might want to look him up, because he was both a Ukrainian nationalist and a Nazi collaborator who helped put some Jews in camps. So yeah, it's obviously this is in no way me trying to justify Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Obviously not.
No.
But yeah, so Ukraine does have a Nazi problem, and it has had a Nazi problem for a long time.
That whole region in Eastern Europe and the Soviet territories.
Yeah.
Has a not good history over the last 100 years or so.
Yeah.
That's, you look into any of it, you're probably going to find some bad stuff.
Yeah.
Even with the good sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And last but not least, the United States and 17 states have sued Amazon in a sweeping antitrust lawsuit.
Yep. A big monopoly case, so they're going after Amazon for the Federal Trade Commission and a bipartisan group of state attorneys general paint Amazon as a monopolist that suffocates competitors and raises costs for both sellers and shoppers.
Yep.
Which is like, yep, that's their history, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what is the story of, I forget what the site was called, like diapers.com, something like that, that they like offered them money to buy them. They said no. So Amazon started offering coupons to get diapers for ridiculously low prices to, you know, kill their audience, and then bought them for much, much cheaper.
Yep.
And now there's no competitor for diapers, at least for that point in time.
Yep.
And then you go through people selling third-party stuff where Amazon Basics just straight up, you know, figures out how to make the same thing, sells it for cheaper, and then you've got no more market.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, so that's happening. But we do have some heroes of the week to talk about to counter all of that. And the first one is that a New York Supreme Court judge has issued summary judgment that concludes that former President Donald J. Trump and his associates systematically overvalued corporate assets over many years. And the thing is, I was like, duh. I'm pretty sure you could ask the regular New Yorker on the street and they would say, no shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, but they did it to a criminal degree.
Yeah.
In one instance, they falsely inflated the total square footage of a commercial building by 300%. They also valued rent-controlled apartments equally with buildings where landlords are free to set their own prices. As the judge said, this is a fantasy world, not the real world. Yeah, so he's been dealing with this. Part of the summary judgment, the judge canceled certificates that allow many of Trump's companies to operate under New York state law. He also ordered the naming of independent receivers who will manage the dissolution of limited liability corporations that hold many of Trump's most prized assets. That includes 40 Wall Street, known as the Trump Building, and Trump Tower. And so a lot of his business in New York is going to be potentially, you know, dissolved in the assets, you know, sold off. And that's great news for New York. So they've been doing this. Still going to be going into trial here in the near future to further deal with what all is going to go on here.
Yep.
But yeah, this involves Trump. It involves Don Jr. Involves Eric and the other people at the Trump Organization.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's gonna be fun. And I think Eric's rebuttal to this was like talking about Mar-a-Lago, talking about how you know they claimed it's worth like $18 million. You know, like it's worth at least 100 times that. Like, you just prove their fucking point.
Yep.
You idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, potentially you could be worth 100 times more, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Reality-wise, no. So there you go.
Yeah. And our next great Heroes of the Week, the Writers Guild of America, because their strike is finally over.
Yeah.
They successfully came out of the negotiating room with a compromise. It has been signed. It's over. The WGA won.
Yeah, you know it's a good deal because the AMPTP basically put out a statement that was just, we have signed an agreement with the WGA.
Yeah.
Like, no fluff to it, no, you know, trying to twist things. They're just like, we did the deal.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, some of the terms of that deal's like, AI can't write or rewrite literary material, and AI-generated material will not be considered source material under the MBA.
Yep.
And the AI-generated material can't be used to undermine a writer's credit or separated rights.
Mm-hmm.
A writer can choose to use AI when performing writing services if the company consents and provided that the writer follows the applicable company policies.
Mm-hmm.
But the company can't require the writer to use AI software when performing writing services.
Mm-hmm.
The company must disclose to the writer if any materials given to the writer have been generated by AI or incorporate AI-generated material.
Mm-hmm.
And the WGA reserves the right to assert that exploitation of writer's material to train AI is prohibited by MBA or other law.
Yep.
So, yeah, they'll be holding their ratification vote in the week ahead.
Yep.
But has told all the members that have been striking that they're free to go back to work.
Yep. And they are, because at least we know some of them are, because all the talk shows that had to go off the air will be starting again Monday. So,
yeah.
Last
week tonight will be on tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm ready for that.
I am too.
Ooh.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm wondering like what their like main story for the night's going to be. It's probably going to be the strike. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, they were probably working on it before.
Yeah.
And then have only, you know, emboldened their desire to talk about it.
Yeah. So now we still have to deal with the SAG-AFTRA strike. And they recently ended negotiations again without a deal. So the strike continues.
They're scheduled to continue negotiations, I think, on Monday the 2nd. So I assume they will figure it out this week coming up.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, the studios, the public is not on their side.
No.
No, they've done, like, several polls, and overwhelmingly, the average person is on the side of the strikers. So,
yeah.
For this one, for the SAG-AFTRA one, you know.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, and on top of that, don't forget, they also have absorbed video game actors into it now as well, because they recently authorized strikes for like 10 major video game companies.
Yeah, some of them.
Yeah. So, And last but not least, our last Hero of the Week is the Supreme Court. They rejected Alabama's defiance and delays in their GOP-drawn congressional maps only featuring one black majority district.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the thing that Alabama's been doing for the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
As in June, the court ruled that Alabama's Republican-drawn congressional map violated the Voting Rights Act because in a state with 7 congressional districts and a 27% black population, the GOP-dominated legislature had created just one congressional district in which black voters are either majority or close to it. The court's 5-4 decision upheld a unanimous decision by a 3-judge lower court panel that included 2 Trump appointees. Lower court had required the creation of a second majority black congressional district, and the Supreme Court agreed. But when the case was returned to the state legislature with orders to create a second majority black district, GOP lawmakers didn't do that. Instead, they upped the number of black voters from 30% to 40% in one of the districts. And so, yeah, the lower courts rebuked them, faced with what they said were delaying tactics and deliberate defiance of a Supreme Court decision. Lower court appointed a special master to draw a new congressional map with two majority black districts to emphasize its displeasure with the state. The three-judge panel refused to put its order on hold, noting that Alabama had already conducted one congressional election in 2022 with an unlawful map. But the state, however, appealed to the Supreme Court a second time in an effort to postpone the creation of a new map. The state argued it should be allowed time for a new legal line of attack. But yeah, the Supreme Court basically told them to fuck off with that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. It's Alabama. Like, what do you want me to say? There's a reason why people morning and say thank God for Alabama.
Yeah.
And then, of course, people in Alabama, they wake up and thank God for Mississippi. You know what they say in Mississippi? They wake up in the morning and they go, why the hell are we still in Mississippi? But anyway,
nice.
Yeah. But with that, it is now time to move on from show proper to the proper show proper. And our first story for the night is that Senator Dianne Feinstein has passed away at the age of 90.
Yeah. Unfortunately, she did not, do any sort of proper succession plan for this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Considering the last year or so that we've seen her, she has not looked good at all.
Mm-mm. I mean, it's her cognition in particular declined noticeably. It was very obvious too. Like, it was to the point where people were like, are they doing like a Weekend at Bernie's type thing here where like her handlers are just using her as a puppet or something? It's like, you know, it was time for her to resign like decades ago.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That doesn't mean she hasn't done good stuff.
Oh, no. She did a lot of good stuff during her career. It's just she was 90 freaking years old, man.
Yeah. She was elected in 92, so around when she was 60.
Yeah.
And is the longest serving woman in the Senate.
Yeah.
So that's something. She's also been, you know, chief supporter of LGBTQ rights for decades. Yeah.
She was the person who became mayor of San Francisco after Harvey Milk was killed.
Yeah.
What was it? Harvey Milk and I think Dave Moscone was the guy. The guy who killed them was Dan White. George Moscone, and it was Dan White who killed them.
Yeah, so that's... She has a great history.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate she undermined a small part of that with her last few years.
Yeah.
Not just retiring and living in peace.
Yeah.
She was going to, you know, retire after this session here, but, you know, died before that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's annoying. Now puts Gavin Newsom in a position to try to decide who the interim is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And has claimed he's not going to appoint anybody running for the election next year, which I don't know how you find somebody to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there are talks of doing a bunch of weird stuff with that, trying to figure out somebody that fits that role.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, moving on, next story. Some of you may remember that the Senate had decided to do away with their dress code recently. Well, they did that so that they could codify a brand new dress code shortly after having done away with it, and that's just what they did. So John Fetterman showed up.
Yeah, it's weird. Obviously, the thing you probably may or may not expect is that it says nothing about women's dress code.
Nope.
It's all men's.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, okay, so the women get to dress whatever. So if you remember Kyrsten Sinema, when she had the thumbs down for the minimum wage raise, she was wearing like a skirt and sweater.
Yeah.
And looked like an asshole doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's fine, and John Fetterman can't wear some, you know, reasonable clothing, but I believe it's, let's see here what it requires.
Mm-hmm.
The Shorts Act, show our respect to the Senate. With the requires business attire, specifying a coat, tie, and slacks or other long pants for men.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it doesn't say anything about women.
Mm.
Let's see here. And they also mention that's like a tradition thing, as if they were not dressed for the occasion. Senators voted from a nearby cloakroom.
Mm-hmm.
As a means of being there, but not, you know, having to dress up for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, been a thing for a long time, and now they're just being just weird about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really dumb.
Yeah. Very much so.
Because they're scared of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of the goofy giant.
Yep.
Who's called the House GOP peckerheads today.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's warranted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bringing back all the old people curse words.
Yeah.
Jagoffs, peckerheads, all that stuff.
By the way, in case you're curious, they did pass that stopgap measure just a second ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's going to Biden's desk. It'll be signed. And so the government will keep funding itself until for a little while.
Just for like a month and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, a judge has ordered the end of the conservatorship between Michael Oher and the Tweets. So you may remember this is the story behind The Blind Side and all that. And about most of that story was complete bullshit. And they basically took advantage of this dude. Yeah.
Yeah. The Shelby County Probate Court Judge Kathleen Gomes announced that she is ending the 2004 conservatorship.
Mm-hmm.
Was not dismissing the case Oher brought against the family in August, asking them to provide accounting information for his finances over the years.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know, conservatorship is a legal appointment allowing a party to handle the financial and personal affairs of another.
Mm-hmm.
The conservatorship between Oher and the two Oes stated that Oher cannot sign contracts or make medical decisions on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge said that she had never seen such a conservatorship used for someone who was not disabled, that it should have been dissolved a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Also saying, I cannot believe it got done.
Yeah.
And yeah, Oher was awarded the state entering his senior year as a football player when he began living with the Tuohys. So they intended on adopting him, but never did it.
Yep.
Because he was over 18, they presented him with a conservatorship instead. Oher alleges that, they gave him the impression that by signing it, he would be considered adopted by the Tuohys, which, I can see how he wouldn't necessarily understand that stuff.
Yeah.
That's good. That's going to be ending.
Yeah.
But I think he's trying to get the money that he lost in that process.
Yeah. Yes. All right, next up. Well, over in Northern England, a 16-year-old boy has been arrested for cutting down the famous Sycamore Gap tree. For those who don't know, this is a big gap in the middle of the ruins of Hadrian's Wall where a sycamore tree has stood for 300 years until this week.
Yeah, for nearly 200 years.
Yeah.
Jeez.
This has been one people have been, you know, walking up to, doing their stuff with it and whatnot. This kid just seemed to just want to get in there and do something to it and cut it down. That's cut near the base of its trunk.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of lying on the wall itself.
Yeah.
So that's a wild thing to happen here.
Seriously.
The team was arrested on suspicion of causing criminal damage.
Mm.
Was in police custody and assisting officers with their inquiries.
Mm.
And it's a world-renowned landmark. The vandalism caused understandable shock and anger throughout the local community and beyond.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that England is upset about right now.
Yeah.
Well.
Not anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
So yeah. The capsule with the sample of an asteroid's rocks has landed safely in Utah after a 7-year mission. Yep.
Yeah. They have collected this, whisked it away in a helicopter.
Yeah.
While also, putting it under a cloak of nitrogen gas to protect it from the Earth's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
As it's transported to the NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston. So that'll be fun to see what they figure out about this.
Mm-hmm.
Things they estimate the rocks will help them understand more about the origins of the universe and how planets are formed and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah. There you go. It's a pretty cool mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, that was really neat. By the way, because, you know, we've been talking about all these labor disputes in the entertainment industry, all of the big streamers have formed a Streaming Innovation Alliance lobbying group, because of course they have.
Yeah. Netflix, Disney, Warner Brothers Discovery, Paramount. Let's see, Afroland TV, American New Network, BET Plus, Discovery Plus, For Us, By Us Network, Max, Motion Picture Association, Motor Trend Plus, and Netflix, Paramount Plus, Peacock, Pluto TV, Telemundo, Televisa, Univision, and VIX, Vault, and the Walt Disney Company. Will advocate for federal and state policies that build on the strong competitive and pro-consumer market for streaming video, according to the group. So yeah, there you go. The main ones missing, what I figured out, Apple, Amazon, Google, YouTube, and Roku. So.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, they have two well-known DC leaders as senior advisors, Fred Upton, a Republican who was in the House of Representatives for 36 years, and Mignon Clyburn, a Democrat who served as acting chair of the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. We'll see if they do anything.
Mm. Yeah. And now we are, of course, formally in the entertainment portion of the show, and we've got some entertainment news to talk about. First and foremost, Netflix has greenlit season 3 of Alice in Borderland.
Yeah. Very cool. Show I like a lot on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They were teasing this in Japan with basically some playing cards that spelled out, I think, a season 3 on it.
Mm-hmm.
We figured out the code for it, so that's cool. The director from the first 2 seasons is returning to do the third, so that's cool.
Mm.
Yeah, so we'll see when this is out in probably a couple years.
Yep. Yeah. And now we're getting on to trailers that we've got. And first and foremost, finally, we got a teaser trailer for Amazon's Prime Season 1 of Hazbin Hotel.
Really?
Finally. 4 years after the pilot debuted on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's finally coming out. And it was originally supposed to come out this summer, but then the writer's strike happened. And apparently they had wrapped on this thing like months ago, but because of the writer's strike and then the strikes that came afterwards, there was just a bunch of stuff that messed up like promotion and stuff. But yeah, finally, I've been waiting for this for so long now, and it's finally coming out. It's coming out January of next year. And not on top of that, they've also started work on season 2. So yeah. It's happening. Cool. So cool. So cool. And it's on Prime, which is a service I already have. So, you know, I don't have to, you know, subscribe to anything else. But,
yeah.
Anyway, moving on from there, we got an official trailer for Netflix's Obliterated.
Yeah. This is the new series from the creators of Cobra Kai.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially featuring a bomb group that goes in and, you know, disables a big bomb that was going to blow up Las Vegas. So they celebrate by, you know, getting drinks and all that.
Yeah.
I guess doing the hangover version of a bomb squad thing.
Mm-hmm.
but then wake up to realize the bomb they disabled was fake and have to deal with the trying to figure out like where the real bomb is at and all that. So that looks like it's going to be a pretty fun, pretty fun series. It'll be out November 30th. So looking forward to see what that is. So yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. But, so that's happening. We also got an official trailer for Netflix's May December, which of course is talking about a May December romance.
Yeah, this is a movie, or yeah, I think it's a movie that is directed by Todd Haynes. And do you remember Mary Kay Letourneau?
Yep.
Yeah, this is loosely based on that.
Yeah.
Natalie Portman is playing an actress who is covering the Mary Kay Letourneau role in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, meets her and her husband, the kid, played by Charles Melton, who, you know, got into it in a relationship when he was 12, had a child that she had when she was in prison. And this is, you know, years later, the kid grew up and married, Mary Kay. And yeah, Natalie Portman sort of shadowing her, learning about her for this role, all that kind of stuff. And it seems like things blur together.
Yeah.
Thinking for a movie that looks pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in theaters in November, then on Netflix on December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. There's a weird-ass movie that looks interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, there's that. We also got an official trailer for Apple TV's Argylle.
Yeah. This is, I think it's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a movie, be out February 2nd. That's, yeah, features the, a writer named, Ellie. I forget what her name is in this. But she is famous for writing this series of spy novels called Argylle.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a Bond-ish thing, but then finds out that her subjects have become real somehow. Or the things that she is writing about somehow foretell the future. So the like entire espionage world is, you know, loves her books.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting the, you know, the heads up of what may be going on in the future, kind of thing. So she gets wrapped up in a whole big spy thriller thing. So, looks pretty neat. Has a bunch of big names in it. Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, Bryan Cranston, Catherine O'Hara, John Cena, Dua Lipa, Ariana DeBose, and Samuel L. Jackson. So, yeah, looks neat.
Yeah. And last but not least, we got an official trailer for Disney's Wish.
Yeah, this is the newest of the Disney animated movies. Based on a story about a king that grants wishes from his subjects, but then finds out that someone else in the kingdom is able to do that as well. And, you know, wants to get her killed because he wants all the power. You know, that kind of thing. So, looks neat. It'll be out Thanksgiving time. So, next month for that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sounds cool.
Yep.
Yes, it does.
Chris Pine is the king. So, we get a bunch of singing stuff in there.
Awesome. 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 And with that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. That we do. We have got ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all the listeners, if you've got a question, comment, want us to get something to read on the air, get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it read for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, and archive.org, you can find all kinds of our unscripted shenanigans there and on pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can possibly think of. And yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wind it down here for the night. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to spread us and our ideas and spread our influence to your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone. They may hate you, but they may end up liking us. So, with that, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Many thanks to Chris Sologi and Teresa Sammons for joining me tonight. See us next week when we will probably have some more, hopefully, happy news. Because this week news actually wasn't that bad. I got to be honest. Actually feels good for once. And I probably just jinxed it. So, yeah, world's probably going to end next week. So, you know, just step away from the gasoline and everything. Good night, everybody.